Metcast, Tuesday, July 9th, 2013. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your Metcast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the Metcast. Well, I am back from my trip to Utah to the fabulous Nerdtacular conference put on by Scott Johnson and the Frog Pants Studio Network. It was a whole ton of fun. Had a great time hanging out, meeting old friends and new friends, and also playing games and just having a generally geeky good time. A lot of podcasting stuff going on there too. Had a chance to meet a lot of great folks who are doing really interesting and fun tech and nerd related podcasts. So if you ever have a chance to get out to the conference, I really recommend it. Actually, we're going to hear from a bunch of people on this episode because I'm introing a new segment. More on that a little bit later. But we got a great show for you. We're going to cover a little bit of news and then mostly do this new segment that I kicked off at Nerdtacular. And if it works out, if you like it, let me know, and we might continue it on future episodes of the MacCast. But before we get into all of that, let me take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, actually a new sponsor here on the MacCast. I sort of teased this sponsor because I'm very excited to have them on board. It is Connected Data, makers of the Transporter. And if you don't know what the Transporter is, it is an off-cloud peer-to-peer storage drive that you can use for privately sharing and accessing your files. So it's like cloud storage, except it's your cloud storage. It's personal cloud storage. It's peer-to-peer. Nothing goes up. Nothing gets stored off on some server that you're not in control of. It's this little network appliance. And when you see the images, you'll think it's a lot bigger than it actually is. It's this little network appliance. It holds a 2.5-inch hard drive inside of it. And it is 100% private. There is no third party involved. It is just you, your transporter, and the people and other transporters that you choose to share your content with. And when I got mine, they gave me one. And what was amazing is how easy the setup was. Literally, you take the transporter, you plug it in, there's a power cable, there's an Ethernet cable. You connect up the power, you connect up the Ethernet to your router, and then you download and launch the software to configure it. They have a little app for configuring it, a little menu bar icon that sort of monitors what's going on when it's syncing stuff up and things like that. But once you have it installed and you're running the setup software, you just set up your different connected folders is what they call them, basically your shared folders, and that's it. It's a web service that manages the routing and setting up your connected folders on your transporter. But beyond that, nothing else is stored in the cloud. There's also no annual fees. It's not like you have to sign up for anything else. You just buy the device and you immediately can start using your transporter. That is it. You can share files with other computers. People who don't have transporters, it'll just sync to a folder. They create a transporter account and then they just syncs to their folders or other transporters. So if you know somebody else who has a transporter, you can connect directly transporter to transporter to sync files and share files back and forth. And it is really cool. You can almost use it like a form of remote backup because once you've set up your files to sync to other locations, they're being shared off, they're being stored, copies of them are being stored in a remote location. And you can access those files remotely either from another Mac or the iPhone, iPad, or even Android apps. So if you need to get access to the stuff that's stored on your transporter, and it doesn't need to be connected to a Mac. It's completely network internet driven. It is a personal cloud. So it's a little appliance. You just hook it up and you can access those files from where and when you need them. And I think it's a really cool product. If you want to learn more about it, if you just go to filetransporter.com/Maccast, you can get all of the details. And this is the best part. As a Maccast listener, you get 10% off the purchase of your transporter from their company store. So just go to filetransporterstore.com and enter the code MACCAST, M-A-C-C-A-S-T, after selecting the transporter you want, and you're going to get 10% off. And the pricing starts at just $199. There's also 1 terabyte and 2 terabyte options, so you can get it, bring your own drive for $199, or you can get a 1 terabyte or a 2 terabyte drive already built in. Check it all out, filetransporter.com/MacCast. And a big thank you to Connected Data and Transporter for their support of the show. So let's get in this week and do a little bit of news. A couple things going on. I saw an interesting story about the MacBook Air being the best-selling Ultrabook in the States. We have lived so long with Apple having their computer market share numbers in under double digits and more recently creeping into the teen level area, moving toward that 20% level. But now NPD Group says that Apple's share of at least the Ultrabook segment of the PC notebook market in the States is over 50%. That more than half of the market share belongs to Apple, and that was achieved thanks to Apple's incredible MacBook Air. According to NPD analyst Stephen Baker, and reported by MacNN, Apple has about 56% of the U.S. Ultrabook market, possibly even more, because Baker's numbers were based on figures that were culled before the announcement of the updated 2013 Haswell-based MacBook Airs at WWDC. And if the number of people who told me at Nerdtacular they bought new MacBook Airs is any indication, I have a feeling that those numbers are rising very, very quickly. That 2013 MacBook Air is really popular. I know a number of you have purchased them as well because you've emailed me to let me know. The piece also pointed out that the MacBook Air achieved the dominant market share while being at a higher price point than many of the competitive models that they were looking at when they were running the study. So people are willing to pay a price premium. It's really a nice confirmation that even in a market, the Ultrabook market, where you think price would be the major deciding factor, that consumers are still looking for that balance of value, design, and quality, and Apple is eating that up. So that was kind of a cool piece to see, you know, Apple having a market share number on a device or a computer above 50% is just something unprecedented in our community. And it's cool that the MacBook Air is bringing that to Apple. Apple Retail is preparing for the fall onslaught of updates. According to 9to5 Mac, Tim Cook actually called a secret summit of Apple's retail leaders to get ready for this whole thing. It happened at Fort Mason in San Francisco, and they say that they were going over quote-unquote sweeping changes, specifically in the way iPhones were sold. I guess what was going on was Tim Cook spoke for about 3 hours, and he was focusing on a plan on how Apple could sell more iPhones direct through their Apple retail stores. He said they're doing really well with Macs. As a matter of fact, it was quoted in the piece that 25% of all Macs are actually sold through an Apple retail store at this point. But in contrast, 80% of all iPhones are actually sold not in an Apple store. They're sold through Apple's retail partners. But for Apple, the trick or difficulty is that 50% of all service and support requests are actually being handled by the Genius Bar. So they're selling iPhones someplace else, but having to do the service and support through their retail stores. And that, frankly, is expensive. So you would want to get that a little bit more in balance. You'd want to have enough sales revenue coming in to sort of support the ongoing tech support and troubleshooting that you're doing and actually replacing phones and all those sorts of things. So the iPhone is really considered in Apple's eyes this gateway product. It's a way to get folks into the Apple community to get them to eventually buy a Mac or maybe an iPad. And the thought process here is that if the purchase is made in an Apple retail store, then customers are going to be better exposed to iPads and Macs and iPods and all the other stuff that Apple offers. So in explaining how Apple was going to go about that, Cook said that they have plans to offer incentives to both customers and to the Apple retail stores themselves. As a matter of fact, they pointed to the iPhone now qualifying for the new back-to-school promo that offered to get $50 gift card with the purchase of an iPhone as one of the initial steps in that plan. It's also expected that more incentives, more of what Apple's going to be doing, is going to be revealed at their quarterly retail store meeting, the next one, which happens, I guess, on July 28th. Apple is rumored to also be launching an iPhone trade-in program. That was actually something that was alluded to in a past report by Bloomberg and then rehashed by this 9to5 piece. Way it works is you would get credit toward the purchase of a new iPhone if you traded in your old one. And Apple would also supposedly offer credit for upgrading even damaged iPhones in exchange for a refurbished iPhone 5. So rather than going through some third-party service, you can go direct to Apple. They'll make you an offer for your old device, say, we'll give you this much cash for it, and you can use that toward the purchase or an of a new iPhone or an upgraded iPhone. The piece also says that Apple plans to offer improvements in their price matching policies internationally. I wasn't even aware of this till I read the piece. Some Apple retail stores in the U.S. are actually authorized to do price matching of iPhones from some U.S.-based iPhone carriers. So if you go out and AT&T has a little bit better price, or specifically, they mentioned Radio Shack as being one of those vendors. If Radio Shack has a little bit better price than your Apple retail store, at least in the U.S., it sounds like they'll do some price matching. They're going to expand those kinds of policies internationally, also to help entice customers to buy an iPhone in an Apple retail store. And Cook did reiterate the fact that Apple retail really is considered by them to be the face of Apple, and told managers in the conference there that they should work harder to ensure that employees know how critical they are to the process and how appreciated they are by Apple. That's been something Apple's been struggling with over the last couple of years. There's been a lot of stories and reports of Apple retail employees not feeling as good about Apple or working for Apple as they have in the past. So it sounds like they're trying to address that a little bit. In reading this piece, to me, it seems pretty obvious that in many ways, what Apple is doing is prepping their retail staff for the fall onslaught of all these new products. According to one attendee in the report to 9to5, he said that customers should expect a quote unquote army of new products in the fall. We kind of already knew that. Tim Cook, in so many words, said at WWDC that the fall was going to be the big retail push. And so it really makes sense for Apple and Tim Cook and the upper management to focus on the retail stores, because that is really how they get in contact with consumers. I think the Apple retail stores have done more to expose the average consumer to Apple and their products, maybe even than all of Apple's marketing efforts. It's the retail stores that are sort of front and center when you see national news reports for, say, a product launch, right? They're doing line interviews, they're showing the retail stores and talking to consumers in those locations. And so even folks who are not familiar with Apple, they know about the retail stores, they know if they want to see Apple products, go in there. That's the place to check stuff out. If you walk into an Apple retail store, it's packed with all kinds of customers, a lot of them who are in there because they're curious about Apple products. It's the people who are thinking about converting. They're going in. It's the place they go to and get exposed to Apple's products for the first time. So it's really critical that the messaging and the public experience that they get when they're in a retail store is the best it can possibly be, and that the employees there are really excited and engaged and care about the products. You don't want them to be disgruntled employees that these folks are going in and interacting with. So Apple really needs to focus on fixing some of those employee morale issues and those customer service and support issues, that whole experience. It wasn't specifically mentioned in the report, but I hope, you know, behind the scenes, it seems we're getting an inkling that Apple knows that this is important. And what they really need to do, I think, is give their employees, the geniuses, and all of the folks who work at Apple retail the tools and the freedom to actually provide and deliver on Apple's legendary great support experience. And we had been hearing over the past year some various stories that Apple was trying to rein their people in. A lot of that came out of John Browett's tenure, so I think a lot of that stuff went away when he left the company. I always got this inkling, though, too, that Tim Cook was really looking at that customer and support bottom line, and some of the comments that came out of this piece seem to indicate that he's still concerned about that, right? That we need to sell more iPhones to sort of justify the support costs that we're spending out behind the counter at the Genius Bar there. So I'm hoping that's just good business, in my opinion, but I hope that doesn't mean that they're also going to be taking cost-cutting measures to not provide as much service and support for iPhone repairs. And I don't think they are, because we heard these other stories again earlier, like last month, where Apple was actually going to do more iPhone repairs in store, that eventually they're going to be able to even replace displays right there in store. And that should cut costs with like shipping and things like that. So it looks like they're looking to cut costs in other areas, but not necessarily with the service and support stuff. And I think if they continue to focus on that in Apple retail and just providing that outstanding consumer experience at their retail locations, they're going to naturally sell more products and people are going to feel better about the company, and they're going to win over more converts. So I was happy to see this story crop up this week, and it'll be interesting to see how they manage things come the fall with the release of a gazillion new products. I got to figure out how I'm going to pay for all that stuff. Save your pennies now, folks, because there's going to be a lot of stuff to buy right before the holiday season. Do you like free apps? I like free apps. I don't think there's anybody who probably doesn't like free apps. There's a cool thing happening on the App Store right now I wanted to let you know about. Apple is running a 5 years of the App Store promotion. I know. Can you believe the App Store has been around 5 years? It seems like it hasn't been that long, but it has. And they are giving us the gifts because they're giving a bunch of apps away for free. Some of, I guess, the most popular or exclusive apps that might be on the App Store. And it's actually a great lineup, great list of apps. I know I immediately grabbed a bunch of them. A Barefoot World Atlas, Day One, which is like a journaling application. How to Cook Everything. So if you're into cooking, that looked like a neat one. I'm not a person who cooks, so I didn't grab that one. Sometimes you want to just grab them just because they're free, because once you have them in your library, then of course you own them from that point forward. So even if you think there might be just someone in your life that would like that application, you might want to just click the button whether you install it on your device or not. Photo application that I had never heard of before called Over, but I'm going to check that one out. I think it allows you to lay text and stuff over your photos as well as do some enhancements. A DJ application called Tractor DJ for iPhone, and then some awesome games. Badland, actually a lot of these I already bought, and you know, I encourage you to buy them also just to support the developers who make these great applications. But Badland, Infinity Blade 2, which I hadn't picked up yet, so I now grabbed that one. Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery EP, Tiny Wings, and Where's My Water. All of those applications are now free on the App Store for this anniversary celebration, so go grab them while you can. We got the news blogs buzzing with some more recent iPad rumors. These are coming out of DigiTimes, which tends to be a big source for Apple rumors. Their accuracy, maybe about 50%. I don't know. I haven't really kept close track, but they do okay from time to time. And they have some reports on what's happening with Apple's new iPads and iPad minis. They're saying we can expect a new iPad around September. The reports are saying that Apple's done some tweaking to the full-sized iPad and suppliers are ramping up their parts production, and that should be Apple shipping parts in August, July timeframe. So that would be a September release by the time all the assembly happens. As far as what's being changed, most of the belief that it's going to be focused mainly on the cosmetics of the device, along with improved battery life. So Apple going to bring the design styling of the iPad mini to the full-size iPad. So you'll still have a 9.7-inch screen with the slimmer side bezels, so it should get a little bit smaller in terms of the physical size, but the screen will be exactly the same, and they're going to match the black and slate and silver and white design styling that the iPad mini has, and it should be a little bit thinner. They're going to increase the battery life. A lot of the reports that I have been reading, it seems that they're going to use one less LED backlight. So I think the current generation models have two. The new ones would just have one. I'm assuming they're doing something tricky to make sure that they get even backlighting across the panel, because that was always the challenge, is that with one LED backlight, you get less consistency across the colors. So I guess they've solved that problem and we'll be able to do just one backlight, which improves the battery life. As for the rumored Retina-based iPad mini update, that seems to be up in the air, according to the reports. The main issue being that Retina display for the mini, I'm not sure the specifics. I don't think the article went into it. Generally, it's yield problems. So they usually work with the display manufacturers to make sure that they can get the number of panels that they want. It could be that Apple's trying to move away from Samsung as a supplier, and maybe some of the other suppliers are having trouble meeting the yields. And again, I'm just totally speculating on this. But what the report said, or the rumor said, was that If Apple went with updating the iPad mini with a Retina display, it could push back the release date from the fall to the end of the fourth quarter of this year. I find that a little bit surprising. I don't think Apple is going to release an iPad mini update without the Retina display. That's about the only complaint most people have when reviewing the iPad mini. So I think that's the logical next step and the logical next update that Apple needs to do for the iPad mini. So if they can't get their yields ready and done for a fall release, they would have to push it back. I just can't think that with the smaller panel, it's generally doing a Retina smaller display would be easier. Maybe it's because some of Apple's competitors are using similar size panels. Maybe they're having trouble to get the quantity. There could be a lot of things affecting Apple's ability to build a Retina-based iPad mini, but they have to do that. So if that's what's going on, then I would put some stock in the rumor that it's pushing to the fourth quarter. But I would think that Apple would want to get that Retina update out in the fall along with all of those other things. So stay tuned. I'll keep an eye on the rumor blogs and hopefully we'll get some more information in the next week or so. But that's sort of the latest on the iPads. And also, there is a new version of iOS 7 out for developers. iOS 7 Beta 3 came out, I think, just yesterday as I'm recording this. And it's just 2 weeks after the Beta 2 update that was released. So Apple reiterating pretty quickly. Some of the highlights in terms of what's in there from Mac rumors. The big one that most people immediately noticed was that there are many places in the operating system where Apple updated the font. They actually changed it from the Helvetica New Ultralight, which was this really thin font. If you've seen some of the screenshots, it was kind of hard to read in some places. They've reportedly replaced that with a thicker version, Helvetica New Regular. So going from ultralight to regular, that's actually a pretty significant update. It's interesting they didn't just go with like Helvetica New Light, some sort of middle ground. I guess they've looked at different backgrounds and different situations and decided that the regular version made more sense. Another interesting one, and I don't know if this is just to save space, but there's a report that Apple removed the .com key in Safari's keyboard. That's actually the same keyboard I think developers can bring up anytime that you would have a form where you'd be entering a URL, and they've replaced it with just the period key. And so if you want to get to .com, .org, .gov, any of those really quick keys for typing, you actually have to press and hold on the period key, and then that comes up in a little submenu. That's actually a feature for a lot of keys on the iOS keyboard. We've covered that as a Mac tip, but in case you don't know, play around on your device. If you hold down, press and hold on a key, often you'll get some alternative characters, great for accented keys and things like that. So if you press and hold on the E, you'll see those options come up. So that's how you'll access .com in iOS 7 Beta 3. Also, the font in the status bar has been increased a little bit, so it seems Apple has recognized the common complaint that in certain situations, stuff is hard to read. They're addressing some of that, either increasing the font size or the weights of fonts. The month view in the calendar application, I guess, now has its little gray dots back to indicate where events are scheduled in the month view. Siri's female voice reportedly has been improved and is more natural than the version that appeared in Beta 2. Beta 2 actually had the new updated voices. The original Beta 1 only had the original Siri voice. In Beta 2, you got the male voice and the female voice that Apple showed off at WWDC. But I guess the female voice didn't sound quite as natural as the male voice. And now with Beta 3, that's been improved. And then the other thing is that there is a new app download animation. You no longer have the little blue downloading bar that shows up under the icon. What they're doing now is more of an overlay, and it's a circular timer kind of icon that counts down or scrolls across the icon as the apps are updating. So that's interesting new animation. And there's images and pictures and a bunch of stuff showing up online. So if you want to check all of that out, head out to the Mac blogs, and a lot of them have the postings for that. And then Apple also did just release an update to OS X Mavericks as well. Developer Preview 3 was sent out to developers. Reportedly, there's no major changes in this update, and the update mainly focuses on performance enhancements and minor bug fixes. So developers will be working with that and giving their feedback there. Apple prepping, I think, both iOS 7 and Mavericks for that fall release and update that they're going to be doing. So We can expect those coming to the public pretty soon, and Apple working hot and heavy to make sure the bugs are worked out and fixed. It seems like iOS 7 has more work than Mavericks from what I've been reading, and I'm excited to get both of those updates in the fall. But that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on and get to our Nerdtacular interviews, I do want to take another quick moment and thank another one of our show sponsors, and that is Gazelle. Hey, if you want to get one of those new Haswell-based MacBook Airs and you have an old Mac lying around, an old Mac laptop that you want to get rid of, a great place to do that is over on Gazelle. Gazelle will give you cash for your old iPhone, your iPad, your Mac, and that's cash you can use to fund your new purchase. As a matter of fact, you can even go out, you can get your offer, go out, get your new product, and then send the old one in to Gazelle because they'll allow you to lock in your pricing for 30 days. So it's worth a shot. Just go over to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. You answer a few simple questions. You tell them what you have to trade in, the condition of that device. They even buy broken iPhones and iPads for cash. So don't worry if it's not working. Just tell them what the condition is, and they will give you a risk-free offer. You lock that in for 30 days, and then they give you all the information and details you need to know for sending in. As a matter of fact, they even pay the shipping, and in some cases will supply a box. And then once they receive it, they check it out, make sure it has all the accessories and matches the condition that you told them it was in, and then you get paid quickly via check or PayPal. So you want to do it today. Gadgets lose their value every day that you wait. So especially if you want to cash in on that, on an old, maybe converting an old MacBook Air to a new one, go over there, lock in your price for 30 days, and you will love the service. It's really easy, a lot easier than dealing with private sale or online or classifieds. And you'll be surprised at how much you can get actually for your old stuff. So sell your used iPhone, iPad, or Mac today over at gazelle.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. Now, one little follow-up housekeeping item I have to do before I get into my Nerdtacular interviews, and it has to do with math. And, you know, a lot of people ask, when will I use math, or why is math important? Well, I'll tell you, math is super important, especially when it comes to decimals. I've never really been a math person, but really that's no excuse for the mistake I made on last week's show when I covered the story about how Apple was paying the record labels for streaming songs in their new iTunes radio service. As so many of you wrote in and rightly pointed out to me, it's not 13 cents per track, but rather 13 hundredths of a cent per track. 0.13 cents per track streamed is what Apple's paying in the first year, 0.14 cents per track in the second year. And doing the math, 100 times that means for every 100 tracks, Apple's actually paying 13 cents. And that makes a whole lot more sense. It's going to be very, very expensive if they were paying 13 cents per track. So thanks to everybody who pointed that out, and I just wanted to make that correction. And I guess I'm not the only one getting it wrong. There were a number of other news outlets and sources who were actually making that same mistake. But stay in school, study your math, kids, because then you won't have the problem that I had. So in going to Nerdtacular this year, as I was on my way out, I knew that I wanted to talk to a number of the folks there, both attendees and some of the great podcasters who were going to be in attendance, about something for the MacCast. I wanted to do something, and right before I left, I got this idea for a new kind of something that could become a regular segment here on the MacCast. And I think it came out of, we talk a lot about app discovery and how hard it is to find new apps for our iOS devices, or more specifically, find those quality apps in the hundreds of thousands of apps, you know, approaching, I think, a million apps on the App Store. How do you wade through all of that and find stuff? And so I came up with this idea, and I was hoping that the people at the show would be receptive to this, because it involves getting a little bit voyeuristic, invading your privacy on your own personal device a little bit. And what I came up with was a segment called, or almost a game, I'm calling it like a game, called What the App Is That? And what I did was I asked folks at the show to let me look at their iOS device, peruse through all the apps that they had on their device and then find the icons or the apps that I didn't recognize, stuff that I didn't know about, and then specifically ask them why that app was on their iPad or their iPhone, why they had it, and what they liked or didn't like about it. I fully expected also to find some people who told me that, hey, I installed that because someone recommended it to me and I never used it. Luckily, that didn't happen. And so I'm introducing this segment, What the App Is That? I will note to you that I had some minor technical issues with my portable rig. I guess my XLR cable is broken and I didn't realize it. So there's a couple spots where you'll hear a little bit of static, and normally I wouldn't even point it out, except that when you're listening back to it, it sounds like there might be something wrong with your headphones or your device, and I don't want anybody to think that they've got a I don't want you to think you have a technical problem with your hardware. It's actually in my audio, so you'll hear it in a couple little spots. I tried to edit as much as possible and clean up as much as possible, so it's not too noticeable, but I just wanted to point that out. But here you go. Here's What the App Is That from Nerdtacular 2013. Enjoy.
All right, so I'm at Nerdtacular, and we're doing What the App Is That. I already told you folks what this is all about, but I ran into David, who's a MacCast listener. Actually said some nice comments in the pre-show, asked me a nice question. And so, David, I'm looking at your device, and you have something. It looks like a photo app. It says it's called Aviary. I don't know if that's the full name because sometimes they shorten them. So what is Aviary, and why do you have it on your phone?
Well, Aviary is an interesting app. I've just started using it, and I liked it because it was very much like Instagram, but it had many more filters and options than Instagram. Now, like Instagram, it had different effects like frames and filters and things like that. The downside is that along with all the free options, a lot of the coolest frames cost 99 cents, or if you buy this pack, it'll be like $5.99. And if you want everything, it's like, let me take a look here. Some of the added effects can go $1.99 for one, and I think it's like $10.99 for a larger pack. So it can get very expensive, but it really has many more options than Instagram and a lot more control, and it uses a normal, like a 6 by, I think it's like 6 by 9 or not square.
The standard aspect ratio, so like a 4 by 3 or something like that. We're running through the app, and we'll do this as we're going through the segment. Looks like it just has a ton of filters and effects, so it looks like maybe it comes with some free ones out of the box?
Yes, it does. It has probably about 5 or 10 frames, filters, hearts, things like that, and then things that Instagram doesn't have where you want to put like a text on it, and some options, like my wife wanted to put some text on the photo and some images on the photo and then share it on Facebook, and that was one of the reasons that drove me to this.
How's the UI for doing stuff like that? Because sometimes with the touch interface, it's well thought out. It's not so well thought out. What do you think?
No, I think it's really well thought out, actually, because you start off with, on the bottom, you know, third or fourth there, you have the enhance, effects, frames, and then they have the stickers, and that's when you have the things like the images you can drop on there. And then you have the additional effects, like where you can crop, you can change things about orientation and focus and things like that.
So it looks like it has a lot of the same features, but maybe a little more advanced. So you mentioned sort of like Instagram in terms of filters and effects like that. Is it also focused around sharing, or do you have options when it comes to that sort of stuff?
Yes.
Like, do you have to use a service?
So it does have sharing options. I haven't really got into that too much yet. It has a lot of other options besides that. You know, as I'm flipping through it here now, it reminds me of, you can add things like memes and things like that. If I look through here again, I think it has options for printing to like photo services and things like that also.
Yeah, it looks very, very cool. It looks like you got red eye reduction. I see adjusting blemishes. So it looks more almost like, on top of all the filters and effects, there's a lot of photo editing and enhancing features as well. And the stickers look like they would be fun. I'm assuming you put glasses and mustaches and stuff on people.
Yes, absolutely. And then here you can share to Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and all the normal, you know, sharing functions. And then you can print to Walgreens.
And I'm assuming you can also save back to your photo library.
Yes, and you can save it back to your photo library.
Well, very cool. And so it's called, what was it called again?
It
Aviary, and on the App Store, probably free, but with a lot of in-app purchase options. Cool, David. Thanks for playing What the App Is That.
Thank you very much.
So I'm with the next contestant on What the App Is That. It's Jeff. We've actually met a couple times here at Nerdtacular, and I was just poking through your device, and I came across an app. I'm assuming it's a podcast app by the name, but it looks like it's called iCatcher. So I'm, you know, a big fan. I think it's no secret on the show of Downcast Instacast. I've heard of iCatcher, but can you tell us why do you use iCatcher?
Well, iCatcher was the only one at the time that would do back-to-back playback without having to create a separate playlist to have your podcast just play. And I usually listen while I'm driving, so it's very important to not have to touch my device to listen to the next episode.
Right. And so is this exclusively how you're capturing podcasts on your iOS device? Do you do syncing? What do you like about it in terms of managing, I guess, podcasts?
It's very easy to find and subscribe to podcasts. I mean, when a new podcast shows up, it's instantly findable in the search, which is always surprising to me. But this is exclusively what I use. I even import individual episodes that I get emailed to me. And it has the functionality. If you have the URL, you can bring in whatever you want.
So you can actually just plug in and subscribe directly if you have a podcast URL. So it has a pretty good directory or browser way for exploring and finding podcasts as well?
Yeah, it has a great search system that's categorized, and you can search by the name or search by just the general subject.
All right, and any other particular features? Something near and dear to my heart, do you listen to any enhanced podcasts? So does it manage chapters and titles and skipping and all that stuff pretty well?
Yeah, it actually is able to do that, even though I don't really see it because I'm, like I said, I'm driving most of the time. The one thing I think that may set this app apart is its ability to, if you have multiple playlists, you can tell it to play everything from one playlist and then go to the next playlist automatically.
Oh, that's actually a really cool feature. I know a lot of people want to be able to like mix and match up their podcast, so you can actually kind of set it up in an order that you want and really finitely control that then.
Yeah, and I really use it for when I discover a new show and I want to go listen to all the old episodes. I put those in a separate playlist. And then I just play through my new content, and then I go back and start playing through the old content from the other podcast that I picked up until I finish that, and then I'm all caught up, and everything's new episodes from everyone.
Right, and so you have it on an iPod Touch. Do you happen to know how well it manages the whole cellular? That's something that's just often a challenge for people, too, like cellular data versus Wi-Fi and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, it has the settings so you can do it on Wi-Fi only or on cellular as well. It actually is more designed for the iPhone, and I've worked with the developer over some bugs that are iPod specific because he doesn't have one to test with.
Cool. Do you happen to know, was it paid, free?
I believe it was a paid app. I think it was $1.99.
All right, but check it out on the App Store, and it is called iCatcher.
Yeah, iCatcher, and then an exclamation point at the end.
Very cool. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
So Allison Sheridan is here from the NasillaCast with me at Nerdtacular. First timer. I kind of had a hand, I think, in getting you here, right?
Yeah, you kind of talked us into it along with Tom Barrett. It's awesome. I'm having a blast.
Yeah, I love this show. I love coming out here. But we're going to play What the App Is That with Allison. And I'm actually going to make you do, too. So strap in. Here we go. So the first one that I came across as cruising through your iPhone was Captio. What is Captio?
So you know how you're not supposed to use your email as your inbox or as your to-do list? I use my email as my to-do list. So Captio is super simple. You open it up. The first time you're in it, you give it your own email address. And then anytime you want to send yourself an email to remember to do stuff, you tap it. You type in the email and you hit send. You don't have to put in a title and you don't have to put in an address. So you can just shoot yourself quick notes that end up in your email.
So you're sending yourself email reminders to do things.
Right, because I use it as my to-do list. So I know what to do because it's in my email, see?
And it's on her home screen, so I know you use it a lot.
All the time.
You're not supposed to do that, but that's cool. That's really cool. Was it free, paid? Couple bucks, probably?
I don't actually remember. I've had it so long. I think it was free at the time, but I think it's a couple of bucks now. But CAPTIO.
Captio on the App Store. We'll check it out. And I'll try and get stuff in the show notes and up on the site with prices and things like that, because I'm putting everybody on the spot. So the other one that I saw on here, it's actually back one page. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. We weren't going to do that one. The other one I saw is Flexi?
Yeah, it's called Flexi, and it's actually written for the blind to be able to type on a keyboard that you can't see. So with Flexi, I'm going to demonstrate it to Adam while we're talking, but I can say, hi, Adam. Actually, it's not going to work well with words. Whoop, that's okay. Are you... So I'm typing without looking at the keyboard, and as I type each word, I'm swiping to the right to give it a space, and it's going to guess what word I mean, and it's like 98% accurate. It is absolutely amazing. You can do punctuation, all kinds of stuff with it, and from here you can send an email, send a tweet, stuff like that.
So it's doing that whole keyboard thing where as you're typing, it's actually suggesting words as you... I can see the words going across the top of the screen here, as you know, above the keyboard as you're typing things out, right?
Yeah, I don't actually look at what it's doing, but I just sit there and type away. You can actually erase the keyboard, and you can type anywhere you want on the screen. It's the weirdest thing. You can type...
Wait, I don't understand how you know what you're typing.
Well, you're typing relative to where the letter should be if a keyboard were there.
So in a standard QWERTY layout?
Right, but you can be in the middle of the screen. I think for right now, I don't remember how to get the keyboard to go away, but I'm just typing... In fact, Adam, why don't you try it, and I'll hold the microphone.
Okay, but I don't know how to touch type.
Well, you know how to type. Type whatever. Just type the way you type.
Oh, I don't know if I can do it from muscle memory, but I guess I have to look. See, I have to look. I can't do it.
Okay. Oh, maybe it wouldn't work because you have to see where it is in order to do it.
Yeah, it's not working for me. But what I'm seeing is, I mean, it looks like it's predictively bringing up stuff as you're typing too. So I notice you're swiping across. So I'm watching you type, right? You're swiping across, and it's just typing out. Does it have some sort of audio feedback as well, or?
I think so, yeah, if you have VoiceOver turned on, you would be hearing what it was doing, but you don't actually have to. With VoiceOver, by the way, you can type on a standard keyboard, but it's very, very slow. This is extremely fast, and what people are starting to do is use Flexi as their main keyboard even when they can see, because you can type like under the table or whatever, you're probably fine.
And then, so does it automatically like put it in the clipboard so you can get it to other apps? I mean, I know we have the sort of restrictions things on iOS, so how do you get it off to other places?
So there's a little button in the upper right that when you're in the middle of, or when you finish writing what you want to write, it's a little blue button, which I assume is audibly noticeable by the blind. And from there, you can copy it. You can send it straight to email, so it'll actually pop open mail and paste your message in. You can do send it through a text message, a tweet, Facebook, and then there's a bunch of settings you can do. It's an absolutely wicked cool app. I want to say it was around $5. No, I think it's more, maybe 10. So it was kind of steep, but for a blind person to be able to type without looking, it's pretty cool to be able to go that fast. Incredibly fast keyboard.
Yeah, and something people should know, Allison's show, NosillaCast, she's been doing, you know, since the beginning, one of the original podcasters along with all of us, also on Mac Roundtable with, a show I started occasionally, I'm on there.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun on the Mac Roundtable, and we always say we really should do it more often because we all have a blast when we do it, but for some reason, one of my goals, I'm just retired, one of my goals is I'm going to be one of the people pushing it to happen, though.
But you do a lot of accessibility stuff, so it's not surprising that we would find some accessibility stuff on your phone, and I think it's great. I try and get Josh DeLionCourt from Accessibility on my show occasionally. I actually need to have him back to talk about some of the new stuff that's coming out in iOS 7, and I know a lot of people are excited about that. So that looks like a really cool app. I'm going to have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and like I said, sighted people are using it too now. It's really taking off.
Although it's going to now force me to have to learn to touch type, something my wife has been trying to get me to do for years, so oh well.
I have to tell you, I had pneumonia when I was in sixth grade, pneumonia and Hong Kong flu, and I taught myself to type from my mother's 1947 secretarial handbook. I was sick for so long, I started teaching myself to type with my toes.
Oh, wow.
Was that? Well, now they do.
Now everybody knows. Thanks, Allison, for playing What the App Is That.
All right. That was a lot of fun, Adam.
And so just so everybody can find you, let them know where your stuff is and where they can check out NosillaCast.
It's over at podfeet.com, podfeet.com. And like you said, it's called the NosillaCast. Thank you, Adam.
All right. We're still here at Nerdtacular playing What the App Is That. And I grabbed Brian Dunaway from Comics Coast to Coast, Final Score, and Film Sack. And you can find a lot of that stuff on Frog Pants, of course. But I took a peruse through your iPad here, and we found a cool app. Infectinator.
That's how I say it.
So, Brian, what the app is that?
Well, first of all, I hit all my dirty apps I didn't want you to find. So I did that before we started the cast. I went to the bathroom and X'd out a bunch of crap. But Infectionator is kind of an 8-bit zombie apocalypse kind of game. And what you're doing is, have you ever played Plague Inc.? It was very big last year. It was you try to infect the world with an infection.
No, but I play board games, so I have played Pandemic.
Right, Pandemic. Just like that. Now, this one's a little bit, this is kind of like, I consider it kind of like an arcade version of Plague Inc. Plague Inc. is just a big map. And, you know, you just click on the map and you tell it you want to infect stuff and you wait and you sit back and wait for things to happen. On Infectionator, you actually get to see the zombies and you get to poke and tap and you get to tap the zombies you want to infect. I'm playing the game right now as we talk. Going to avoid my son's game. He's 15 and he's way better at this than I am. So, but you have a couple of different modes. You get world domination or endless infection. I've only made it to wave 14 on endless infection because it gets hard fast. But world domination, that's where I usually go. I played a lot of this with Dave as I went up the road. I've actually made it to the hardest mode. I played the easiest mode through, basically, because you don't get an option. You don't unlock the hardest mode until you get through the easy mode. But as you can see, but your listener probably can, unless they download it, when you first start, you have a big map of the world, and you get to choose different cities that you want to attack.
So you hate Europe, it looks like.
I hate Europe so much. Actually, it always seems to launch. That's where your first green dots to choose from, the cities. Once you unlock certain parts of Europe, then you unlock America and Central America, and you go and you kill the Australians. You're welcome, Kim. And I've barely gotten into Africa into the hardest mode. But you'll choose a location, usually large cities in each of the continents. And we'll see here. We got a green dot here on Mogadishu.
And it's actually zooming in, so you're tapping on, now you're in Africa, now you're picking a city.
Right, and each time you do this, you have challenges. And this one, what I'm going to do is 35 seconds, and you're trying to kill 20 army soldiers. And if you get this game, I absolutely suggest you get this game. I think it was free. It was either free or it was 99 cents. It was very cheap. I didn't pay more than $2, I know. But you have power-ups down at the bottom that you can choose from, and you can choose the emperor or the king of North Korea, right? He's pretty bad, eh? You sit him out, and you send him out to people, and people will scream, but you'll have FBI agents and other such factions that will try to stop you. The main mode of play is infecting the people who are running around. You throw them in a virus, and they get infected, and they run around, and they infect everybody else, unless they get killed, which is too bad. So what you're trying to do is fight. There will be troops that will come in and try to stop you, just like any other game, so they get a lot tougher to kill. Right now, we are running, and Tina Ibbett is trying to take a look and see what we're doing here. And
it's got amazing graphics. I mean, it's 8-bit, but a lot of detail went into these maps, and it's kind of that top-down, three-quarter perspective sort of thing.
Right. I say 8-bit, it's probably closer to 32, but it's meant to be core, you know, kind of old school looking, and we didn't win, but you're seeing here now during the breaking news, during the clips, this is one of my favorite parts. You get to dress up the reporter who's telling you about what's going on, and you unlock different bits of that, and she's always got lots of cleavage. I like the police uniform because, well, why else, you know, I mean, police uniform women, they wear pearls, right? That's right. They got their pearl, and she's got her hazmat suit, and then she's got some kind of funky thing from the 90s, I think, here. But because you can tell, I've unlocked a lot of the costumes. Is that a really big motivation? I don't know. Maybe for some people, me. But they've got a really weird Santa contingent in this thing, in this game. You have you can actually attack Santa's land, and you get some upgrades that allow you to do that as well. But
looks like you got different levels of zombies too. So as you you can get bigger and badder zombies.
Exactly. You can get some really nice zombies, and they're locked. Everything is locked when you first start. And you can, I think the first thing you get is these guys. It's a zombie mod, They have a little pretty good health. They kind of have like this Michael Jackson dancing kind of thing. And there's actually a Michael Jackson in here too that I don't think I have unlocked right now. But you got really strong zombies. You got crazy zombies. You got zombies that do nothing but collect coins.
And it's coins how you unlock things.
Right. Coins are how, whenever you kill someone, there's certain coins released, just like in any game. If you kill something, a coin is going to be released.
Of course.
Just like real life. Yeah, if you knock somebody down, their coins fall out of their pocket. So you also get supports where you can add additional infection, and you also can have just straight-up explosives that allow you to kill like the FBI agents and these different... Actually, it's not only FBI agents. You also have to go against gangsters, and they have guns. So those guys are tougher to beat. So sometimes your zombies can't handle it. They can't go against those kind of guys. So you get an opportunity to throw grenades or goo or something else. And one of the most important parts of leveling up is the level up on the actual zombies, because the zombies, they can infect, but they expire pretty quickly. So you can increase your lifespan by once you collect enough coins, you can increase their levels on their lifespan, speed, damage resistance, attack, and such as that.
So you can change the attributes on your zombies and tweak them as you like.
Exactly. And they're nice enough to also offer you the ability to, if you're lazy and you have lots of money, you can just buy that stuff. So you go to the booster tab and you can do that, and you can chunk down, you know, up to $25 at a time. And I'm not going to do that because I'm cheap.
Yeah, I'm cheap too. But you can buy your way into you know, being better than your friends.
Absolutely. And I know people that do that, Scott Johnson. No, but the thing that makes this game so playable and is because there are so many options for upgrading, and it's such a reward system. You get these achievements as you go along, and the gameplay is just interesting enough to keep you coming back to it. You're like, oh yeah, well, I really do want to see that reporter in the, you know, in the stripper uniform that we haven't seen yet that I can unlock. It's very casual. Usually a session of gameplay with this is usually 15 to 20 minutes. I play shorter sometimes, but usually by the time you get in, you find yourself a little bit addicted. I'd never play more than an hour, because you really realize, you're like, oh man, I've been playing this for an hour. I got to get the crap out of here. You can post your stuff to Twitter. You can take pictures, actually. I don't know if you saw, there's an icon when you're actually playing that you can take pictures of. There are some really bad A bosses on some of these continents. You'll get on there, and you can't kill that boss unless you have the right zombie. And so you have to look for that element as well. And the Santa's Workshop is probably the most... I don't explore it very much because it's usually very confusing, but they do have it there, and there's just so many elves when you're trying to play this part, and I can never tell who's infected and who's not. As you can tell, I tried to infect somebody I missed, but you can see Santa here. He's walking around. Santa's a bad A. It is almost impossible to kill Santa. Oh, and see how fast I got wiped out?
You lost. That was quick.
It didn't take just a second. But you go back to your objectives. It allows you to retry as often as you want, and there's really no penalty for losing other than if you've purchased upgrades such as bombs or grenades. You're out of them. You've used them up.
Well, cool. The app is called Infectinator, and it's in the App Store. Thanks, Brian. If folks want to check out more of what you're up to and what you're doing, where should they go?
Absolutely. Check out briandunaway.com. That's the best place to branch off for all my social networks and everything else. But if you go to Frog Pants, you'll see us there, Comics Coast to Coast, The Final Score, Film Sack. And we've had a great time at Nerd Tackler, and we've enjoyed your company as well. And thank you so much for hooking me up with a little bit of coffee.
Yes. Yeah, we're recording early in the morning. Got to have coffee. Hey, thanks, Brian, for playing What the App Is That.
Loved it. Love it. Thank you so much.
Well, it's Nerdtacular, and look who's here. It's Brian Ibid. I can't even do a radio voice. Whatever. Host of Covervale, Brian's with me, and he's going to be the next contestant on What the App Is That. So I perused through, and I had to pick a music thing, you know, being Brian and Covervale. So, Brian... We have Jamstar. What the app is that?
Well, on Covervale, I'm always playing music from the consumer point of view. I'm playing MP3s. I'm playing audio files. But deep down inside, I'm a budding musician. I really want to play guitar. And with the help of Jamstar, I'm going to learn how to play guitar. It's a lot like Rock Band in the way that you've got a fret with colored lights coming towards you, and you've got to make the chords and strum at the right moment to get the points and to progress. But instead of having the red, yellow, blue lights like you have in Rock Band, you've actually got 6 strings, and it tells you where to put your fingers and when to strum, and you'll learn how to play music that way. What's really cool about it is that not only do you get... They're talking right now.
It's giving us voice instructions. That's cool.
Yes. So it starts always by tuning your guitar, which if you've seen anybody play live, you know they have to tune between every single song they do. And you start out with some really easy things like A chords and G chords and things like that. But you can go to their online store and actually buy specific songs. Oh, yeah, we'll skip the tuning. Good. And you can learn how to play Rush's Tom Sawyer or Undisclosed Desires by Muse. And so you can actually specifically pick the songs that you want to learn how to play using this app. It's brilliant. It really is. And I'm not very good at it. I just got it, but I'm really excited to start learning. So we're going to start seeing some chords. And it's telling you, all right, your one finger should be on this spot. It even shows you fingerprints where they should be.
Yeah, so it's lighting up in little colors on the fret side, and then you've kind of got the little dots going down toward the bottom, and that's showing you there's one dot. It looks like on each string that you would then pick.
Exactly, exactly. And then there's open. You know, the O's are for open, but so on this one you'd have your first finger on this string, and then the other two, and then you'd strum just those chords. And even tells you at the bottom, this is an A major chord, or this one is an E major. So not only are you learning the sounds, you're learning what they're called, so that you'll be able eventually to read sheet music too.
Right, and it's got a beat going behind it, and I notice right now it's pretty slow. Yes. So I'm assuming you can adjust that.
You can adjust that, and this is level one. And as you can tell, I haven't progressed past level one. But yeah, you can speed it up. You can choose different chords. You know, say I really want to work on this set of chords, and specifically fine tune it to work with a certain set of chords that you're maybe having problems with. And then, like you say, once you move past that, you start going into buying songs that you specifically want to learn.
Right, and I noticed there's a mic level thing. So I'm assuming it's picking that up. Is it going to evaluate how accurate and whether you're hitting it the right time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's got a built-in chronometer, I think is what it's called. So it'll know if you're out of tune. And if you hit it at the right point at the right time, you get points for it. And you need a certain number of points to progress to the next song.
Oh, we did horribly.
We failed, probably because we don't have a guitar.
Yeah, we were really playing along. But I also noticed when you launched it, it looked like there was an online element. So can you kind of compete against your friends to see who's progressing and learning faster and all that kind of fun stuff?
I believe so. It does hook into Facebook. So other people who use this app, you can see how they're doing. You can see how you're doing. Yeah, here's some of the example songs like Losing My Religion by REM, Margaritaville. And it is a pay. You know, you do buy those things additionally after you get the app, which is free. You find out which songs are trending, the difficulty level of those songs. So I could probably at this level do none of these. Yeah, and at no point could I do any of these songs.
I was the same way. I've wanted to learn guitar like for years and years, and I tried. And when GarageBand came out with its lessons, do you ever play around with any of those?
I did play around with those and started again with 2 or 3 of them and probably got distracted by something shiny and moved away. But
Well, they were excellent, but you're not going to get any feedback or evaluation. So this looks like a lot more fun. I mean, it almost makes like a game out of it.
Yeah, it's learning. Gamification of learning how to do something is absolutely the way to, at least the way for me to get to do it. I want to feel like I'm achieving it and actually try and beat my last score and do better. And this way I don't have to pay a music instructor who will yell at me and curse at me
Right. It makes it fun. Yeah, it's a good motivator. Well, very cool. It's called Jamstar. Well, look up the price. I told everybody I'll have prices in. You don't happen to know off the top of your head. Yeah, we all forget our prices. We just buy the cool stuff. Just buy it.
She Loves You is on sale right now for 99 cents. Unfortunately, it's 3 guitars.
Level 3. You're not there yet. Well, eventually, you know, with using the app enough, you will get there. Well, Brian, very, very cool. I'm sure folks know about your show, but just tell them again what you're up to, where they can find what you're doing and follow along and stuff.
Absolutely. Well, the shows that I'm most known for are Coverville, obviously, The Morning Stream, Film Sack. You can find all the Coverville stuff at coverville.com. You can find all the Frog Pants stuff at frogpants.tv.
Awesome. And come to Nerdtacular.
Yes, and I'm all over the place. You can't miss me.
Cool. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Adam.
All right, now I've got the father of Nerdtacular, Mr. Scott Johnson, and I just poked through his phone because we're playing What the App Is That, and I came across something. I've actually seen this on the App Store, and I'm really curious about it. So, Ridiculous Fishing, Scott, What the App Is That?
Okay, so Ridiculous Fishing came to me through a couple of sources who said, Scott, you have to play this. This is why portable devices were invented. This is why gaming portably is fun again. You need to try it. And I hear that all the time. I got a billion games. I've tried a billion games since the App Store launched. It takes a lot to surprise me these days. Most crap is microtransaction, dumb, lame, stupid, boring, whatever. So along comes this app. And my first impression is, oh no, another converted kind of flash engine looking thing. They're never as good as the real games or whatever. But this game nails that pick up and quickly get a couple of rounds in while you're in the dental office or on the bus. That vibe, that quick bing, bang, boom thing is just built into this app. And it's crazy stupid. You basically just drop a sinker into the water with a hook on it. And as it drops, you move your phone, use the accelerometer to move the hook around and catch as many fish as you can on the way down, and then on the way up, pull as many more fish, avoiding obstacles and bad stuff, as many more fish as you can on the way up, which is much faster, and then it just counts up how many freaking fish you got, gives you a bunch of points for that, move on to upgrade your hook, how long your line is, different kind of waters and locations, we get better fish. It sounds stupid on the surface. The most addicting things I've ever put my hands on, and I wish there were more games like it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, one thing I immediately noticed, it's got a very distinctive style, though, to it as well. Like, I'm a sucker for, like, really cool, just different-looking stuff, right? It has a different kind of look to it.
It definitely does. I would call it, it's all vectors, right? So there's not a lot of raster image going on, but it's also very abstract. It feels like an old painting in a weird way. And it gets the job done. You know that your guy kind of looks like a guy with a fishing pole, but it's intentionally retro. I'd say it's stuck somewhere between like Atari 2600 and the original Nintendo Entertainment 8-bit system, something in between there, but with great sound, great humor. One advantage I think it has over a lot of games that try to be this quick, casual experience is the speed at which you get through things. There's no long menus to wait through. There's no load times. There's no anything. It's just do the thing you meant to do and do it quickly and get on to the next thing. And it's got that kind of one more hook, which I'm always a sucker for.
Yeah, it's got this very geometric style to it, too, I think. It's like a lot of just triangles and squares and, you know, so not 8-bit because it's vector, but it's got that kind of vibe to it. I've seen screenshots of it. The other thing I've seen, though, is, I mean, you mentioned sort of, I didn't know the mechanics of it, so I'm glad you described that. Now I'm going to have to try it out. But this going down and going up thing, but I saw some screenshots and, like, things blowing up and stuff like that, like power-ups or something, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you can send, like, I want to say they just call it plain old dynamite, but there's various levels of this. But you can send that down there, blow that thing off, and end up killing a ton of fish at once, which gives you all these points immediately, so you don't have to worry about catching them. There's also better guns. Oh, I forgot to mention this part is the best part. When you bring the line back up, and you essentially yank it out of the water, and all of these fish you caught fly into the air, and now you got to shoot them. And you shoot them by tapping, and it's no big deal. So tap, 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 and get as many as you can. Any that you miss, you don't get the points for. Those fish get smaller or faster or harder or whatever, so there's a lot of challenge there. But you buy new guns. So you start with a pistol. Later on, you get a shotgun, and that thing's got a better blast. You can maybe even get two at a time when you hit it. So there's this ridiculous tapping game that happens after. So the two most basic functions of the phone, touchscreen tapping and accelerometer control back and forth, that's all the game is. Two very simple things. And I would argue more developers that are making games for iOS and even Android for that matter need to focus in on the core strengths of the device like that. Otherwise, they're trying to force feed, stick controls and multiple buttons on screen, all this virtual control stuff that was really never meant for a device like this. The best games on these devices are the ones that go, guess what? We're a touch device and we can have movement stuff. Done. You don't need to go much further than that. And I really appreciate a game when they can pull that off.
Yeah, now I'm going to give a little background because actually I'm in an iOS developer group. And I heard about this game and saw a lot about it because we just did a session on something called Open Framework, which you might be interested in being an artist. So Open Framework was this thing that was originally designed as a framework for mobile and touch systems for like performance artists and stuff like that who wanted to do projection stuff. And so that's where they have a lot of vector libraries and all that stuff built in. And I guess this game is built on top of that platform. This is really cool, yeah. Oh,
that's cool. So I know there's, I mean, it's interesting to watch the race for the platform race. So Adobe wants everybody to be using their framework, and they're trying to make it easier, and they really are making it easier to take Flash development, Shockwave development, other kinds of Adobe development, and turn that into iOS content. And it's kind of sucked in the beginning, but it's gotten really, really good and really seamless. And I know a lot of people are using that. This is a really cool thing. The Unity engine, which is really popular on all sorts of platforms, Mac, PC, and all the way down to these mobile devices, very scalable, more and more, and cheap, by the way, to license and use. So more and more, you're going to see Unity, as at least for games where you're using a lot of 3D elements, Unity's going to kind of take over that space. I mean, it's incredible, actually, kind of the range that thing has. You're already seeing big names in licensing, engine licensing, like the Unreal Engine, which is so dominant in PC and console space. That thing scales down really well to iOS. So you've seen amazing stuff like... Well, the name always leaves me. The one where it's like Punch-Out, but it's huge swords, and you have to dodge, and the guy, giant sword, hits the ground in front of you or whatever. What's that game called?
You're the Gamer. That's my problem. I'm not a big gamer.
A crowd, I'd ask, and they'd know. It's something sword. Don't leave yet, Dave. Something sword. So I can't remember. But anyway, they use that engine. It's beautiful. They did that Epic Citadel demo, which was a big deal on stage. That was unreal. So more and more, I think you're going to see frameworks / engines far more tailor fit to what mobile developers want to do with their games or other apps for that matter. And I think that's awesome. I think that's a great platform for it. Certainly have the power for it now with these faster chips. And you've got the capability to create really immersive experiences with a lot of existing technology, which means developers already kind of know the framework. So they just build what they want to build, and it's awesome.
Awesome, awesome game stuff on coming to iOS with all these frameworks. And Unity's talked about in the iOS group all the time. Well, cool, Scott. You want to tell people a little bit about Nerdtacular, and let's get them here next year. One, it's awesome show. A lot of this, if you're into this gaming stuff, you guys have great gaming panels as well as podcasting stuff and all sorts of stuff. So tell everybody a little bit about that, and then about what's going on Frog Pants and how they can find all that stuff and check everything out.
Sure. Well, if you're interested in Nerdtacular, nerdtacular.com, just like it sounds, is how it's spelled. Is where you can find photos and video and all kinds of information about what the event has been over the last few years and what it's sort of become. This year we had an enormous group of people at a beautiful venue. It went amazing. I don't even know I have words for how well I think things went. We're going to decompress this next week and really come up with what we think happened, but feels like big success all around. And I'm stoked because we're going to put all this video content up, high def video, streaming and otherwise. We'll have all kinds of stuff on the store for people who missed it. They want swag bags and things. Kickstarter supporters are getting all kinds of love back from us as well. But it's just a great place for geeks to come and hang out and talk about the stuff they love to talk about, meet the people they like to hear in their favorite podcasts, including you, Adam Christensen. So it's always good to have you here as well. But that's the best place to go, nerdtacular.com. As far as Frog Pants goes, busy stuff, lots of crap going on. Morning show is still happening. Oh my gosh, if you're into World of Warcraft, the instance is still the best one on the internet and always the highest in the numbers. So if you're looking for the most definitive World of Warcraft podcast, I think we still offer that and way more than I could mention here. So for that stuff, just go to frogpants.com, and love to get more people out to Nerdtacular next year that listen to the MacCast.
You can search Frog Pants on iTunes too. I know all the shows will come up. A bunch of great tech geek nerdy stuff. So cool. Thanks, Scott.
It was my pleasure, Adam. Thanks.
All right, one of the things I love about coming to Nerdtacular is just all the great people I get to meet. And a couple years ago, I think I met, maybe it was last year, I don't remember. Just last year, I met Joel Duggan, who does a great webcomic called Starcrossed. I'll let him tell you a little bit about that later. But I grabbed him, and he let me poke around on his iPad for one of the apps that I'm going to ask him about and what the app is that. And I saw that you have Diptych, which I think I've run across before. I've seen it on other people's devices, but I've really never understood what it is. So, Joel, Diptych, what the app is that?
Diptych is a photo app that allows you to put photos into a frame, which you can then adjust. So there's a bunch of kind of presets. You drop in the photo or image that you want, and then you can manipulate it. You can zoom in, zoom out. You can change the color balance, the brightness, darkness, contrast, all that kind of stuff. You can change the style of the frame. You can save presets. So if you use something that was like a triptych or a diptych, you know, repetitively, you could just save that particular setup. I use it actually quite a bit, inspired by the guys at creaturebox.com. They share artwork. So they'll do like a little sketch in their sketchbook and they'll take a picture of it, but it might only be a 4x5 image. So what they'll then do is use that high-res image and they'll zoom in on something really specific, like maybe the most interesting part of the drawing is the wrinkles in the nose or the look in the eye that they've drawn. So they give you the full image on one side, and then they give you a kind of a close-up of what they think is the coolest thing about the piece, kind of just to kind of sell it and make it look a little bit different.
Right. So when you launched the app, the first thing I noticed is you had a bunch of sort of preset, they almost look like comic panel layouts. You know, if anybody's looked at a comic book, you've got different squares and areas, and it looks like they're divided into several different categories that you can jump through to kind of pick from.
Yeah, the way that it works is the first thing that comes up on the iPad is your recent. So these are all the recent setups that I've used to, you know, share my comic images, maybe some photos of, you know, sending some books out at a post office. Then in the classic view, it's just divisible by, you know, 1, 4, you know, 2 vertical, 2 horizontal, and there's variations therein of all the different kinds. Jumbo is another one where they give you even more panels, 9, for example. And then there's fancy ones that have like squiggles or waves or hearts and alien faces, stuff like that. And they start with like a common, I guess, a common color for the frame color, which can be changed later on. But there's more than one page. I mean, you can go X's and O's. You can get into like basketballs, baseballs. I mean, really cool for if you're a parent, your kids play Little League, you want to take their photos and put them in like a baseball picture. You know, you could put like them out on the field in the middle, and then in the other sections, you could have like little close-ups or like pre and post game stuff. And I mean, again, even within the jumbo category, there's like, you know, at least 3 pages of options that you can get into, and you can get really kind of fancy with it. Like, I mean, I have fun on weekends. I tweet my brunch, my pancake brunch with my girlfriend, and sometimes I'll take pictures of every step of the way, you know, like the fresh blueberries, the coffee, the flour, and then the bacon in the pan, and then the final result, and then just kind of smash them all together into an almost unreadable kind of image where it's like 6 strips of photos, and you can't really see everything that's going on, but what you get is pancakes, you know, like what you see is breakfast. But it's a little bit way of breaking that kind of faux pas of like taking pictures of your lunch and posting it on Instagram.
Right. And so then when you go in, when you select a layout, then you're going to, it's like a photo collage thing. So you've got a bunch of photos. I'm assuming it's tapping into your camera roll. And then I noticed you could pinch to zoom within a panel, sort of adjust the cropping and framing. And then it also looks like you can kind of tweak the borders and rounded borders and colors. And I see some textures in there. What's all that stuff about?
So the textures is what you think. It changes the border to a texture if you want it to be. Which I really don't like. It's fun. It's more 14-year-old girl than I really usually work. But you can change the border colors with just a simple brightness slider, as well as a color selection slider. If you're anybody's familiar with Photoshop, it's the same 3 sliders. You can also change the roundness of the outside border, as well as the inside borders. You know, everything used to have those rounded corners, just like the Apple apps. You can also change the thickness of the border. So if you wanted to have something with a little bit more of a margin around your photos, you can move that around. The other thing that I really like is that they have this, instead of just freeform editing, if you wanted to move things around, you can edit the positions of the frames. You can then put up a pre-formatted grid, which is 8x8, 10x10, or 10x12, and then it snaps the point to that thing. So if you wanted to try to come up with, you know, something that was balanced in thirds, or if you wanted to try and manipulate something quickly and have it be a perfect square or have it be like a straight edge, it's a lot easier than just doing like when it's off the grid, at which point it becomes a very organic kind of experience, and you can kind of make really unique compositions, which, I mean, it's kind of endless because they give you a whole bunch of formats that are kind of like, you know, drop your photos in, 3 minutes later you've pumped out something really kind of cool looking. But if you're like me and you like to noodle around, then you can get into some really, really fun stuff. I really enjoy the grid for compositions and stuff like that, especially if you want to have something that's got like a square you know, format. You want to keep that format true to the original template that you've designed. There are some other things that you can actually purchase as well, which I haven't yet, but you can buy like different templates. You can change the aspect ratio. Right now, I can only do a square. I think the idea was to be easily shared on Instagram and similar photo apps, but you can pay for the app or pay for an upgrade and get like a landscape 16:9, do stuff like that. And you can actually get it for the Mac desktop too. I think it's only like $299 or $49. I mean, don't quote me on that. I'd have to look it up, but it's totally worth it because then you do have the landscape and the monitor kind of proportions that you can mess with and do all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah, and I noticed the other thing I noticed down there, way down there at the bottom of the interface, it looks like you can also add some text and things like that.
Yeah, I don't often add text. I tend to do that in whatever I'm sharing it on via Twitter or Facebook or Instagram is usually the way that I work with it.
Yeah, but maybe if you want to do more of that kind of scrapbooking kind of thing or just add some explanation to an image or something like that. That's really, really cool. It looks like very, very flexible. So it's called Diptych. So you mentioned it's paid on the Mac version. Was this one free and then paid upgrades, or is there a base price? I'm going to put the information out for people if you don't know.
The information, I believe, is $299, but I've seen it on sale.
Yeah. It looks like an awesome app. I got to pick this one up. I've kind of seen it on different people's devices, and so it's very likely a good one. Well, now I know it's a good one, but when you see it on multiple devices, you're like, that's got to be a good app if so many people have it. So. Very, very cool. Well, thanks, Joel. If people want to check out the webcomic, they want to check out what you're up to, I know you just kind of put out a book. I don't know what availability like that is on. I know it's a new project. So tell everybody what you're up to and where they can find your stuff.
Sure. Starcrossed is my webcomic. You can find that at starcrossedonline.com. And the book was just released in October of 2012, so it's not quite been out for a year. It's a typical 100-page comic strip collection, and you can buy that on the store, either linked from starcrossedonline.com or just look me up. JoelDuggan.com is where the store is actually located, and there's all kinds of stuff there.
Very cool. Thanks.
Cheers. Thanks, man.
So there you go. What the App Is That from Nerdtacular 2013. I have to tell you, Nerdtacular was in a different place this year than it has been in years past. They had it up in Snowbird in Utah, and it was gorgeous. So if you've ever considered going, it's a great resort, and there's all kinds of stuff to do and see even beyond just the show itself. But the show was amazing this year. They spread it over 2 days, had great music performances. Brian Brushwood did an awesome whole magic thing. I don't know what they're going to be doing next year, but if you've ever even had an inkling that you might want to go, make sure you check it out and catch it next year. I will be going almost for certain unless there's some sort of thing preventing me from doing so. And I just have a great time every year I go. And as you can tell, there's a lot of great people there. I do want to make one comment on the Flexi application that I reviewed with Allison Sheridan. I don't think that I described it well enough or gave her an opportunity to describe it well enough because I tried it afterward and it is really cool. What she was saying as far as not having to look at the keyboard while you type, or even if you look at the keyboard while you type like I do, I thought it kind of required the ability to do touch typing or not looking at the keyboard. But really what it allows you to do is just type out really fast and not worry about what part of the screen you're getting at. So like with iOS, you have to tap the right key, the little outline of the right key to get it to type correctly. With Flexi, you just have to get close. If you get within the range of the character that you meant to type, it will figure out what word you're trying to type and allow you to type a lot faster. So wanted to point that out as a feature, and it's free. I know we didn't have a lot of pricing on there and we weren't really sure about that one. It's totally free, so you can try it out and you can see exactly what we mean. So check that out, flexi.com, F-L-E-K-S-Y. And as far as all of these apps go, I have now put them all. This segment worked for me because I put all of these on my iOS device. I downloaded everything, and there's not a single one of them over $2.99. So very affordable applications, worth checking out. And if you think this segment, if you enjoy this segment and you think it will be good for future episodes of the MacCast, I might add it when I go different places and are able to interview people. I think it's a good addition, even if it's part of another segment. I think this whole app discovery thing, finding out what other people have on their devices, that's how we all figure out and find out about apps, right? You're at a party, you're someplace, and someone has an iOS device, and you're like, well, what do you use for photos, or what do you like for downloading podcasts, or these questions come up, and it's a great way to exchange and discover new applications. So let me know what you think. Send me feedback, maccast@gmail.com. But that is going to do it for this episode. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and recognize all of my show sponsors: Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander Touch for iPhone and iPad, as well as PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad. You can get all of their details and find out more about their software over at smilesoftware.com. Gazelle, it's the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets online. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, MacBook, even your Samsung Galaxy S phone or other smartphone is worth over at gazelle.com. Really simple process. Check it out. And Squarespace, a beautiful and intuitive website publishing platform. It allows you to create professional looking web pages, blogs, online stores, galleries, everything all on a simple, great platform. It's really easy to use. You can try it free. No credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com/maccast to sign up. And when you sign up for a new account, you can get 10% off by using the offer code MACCAST7. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. And thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. Big thank you to you for your support. Please keep your emails, your audio comments coming. I love hearing from you. Let me know what you'd like to hear covered on future episodes. Ask me a question if you're having technical issues with your Mac. I welcome those. You can send your email to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. And if you prefer Skype, you can leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast, and I look forward to hearing from you. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, and that includes all of these great applications that we talked about, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And you can follow me online. I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast, or check out the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheMacCast, and pretty much MacCast on all the other social media sites, including Google+. So find me there. And until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.